Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. I'm sorry about yesterday. As I said on my Facebook page, sometimes I think it's just me because I'm a technical buffoon some days. However, later on in the day, my husband and I were at the doctor's office and huge operation at a hematology doctor's, and every computer, every laptop, everything was shut down. So I guess it happens everywhere. Our cyberspace is getting a little crowded, I think. So instead of the show that I was going to do yesterday, I thought about doing that today because it is an important show. I decided I'm going to do that next Monday because I think more things are going to happen in regard to that. That's the story about the adoption agency or the unwedded mother's home in Ireland and the continuum of all these things that we find out that happened in the middle 1900s that are shocking. And I want you to know the only reason I want to talk about these things is because most of the time we're talking about things that are so bad today. And as bad as it is today, we're at least past some of those things. I think that stuff still exists, but I don't think it's as commonplace or, and here's a key word, as acceptable as it was in those days. People knew what was going on in those days and thought it was okay because people that were in charge said it was. And we blindly, in many cases, believed that it was the only way that some things could be handled. So next Monday we will talk about that story. And as I said, every day I find a little bit more, so waiting until next Monday may be beneficial to all the information that we have. But today is Bullies to Buddies Day, and I want to make sure that everybody understands the definition of morality. Morality is the principle concerning the distinction between right and wrong or good and bad behavior. And in some cases, morality is the most important code of ethics anybody can have. Our problem is, I think, today, is not that we know we do good and bad. We know we are good and bad. We know we participate in good and bad. I think we need to be able to distinguish between what's immorally bad. If you do things that you know aren't so good for yourself, that's your business. If you don't take care of yourself the way something in your head tells you you should, that's your business. But when you hurt others, and when your actions, your deeds, and everything you do in any given day is actually hurting others, then you're behaving immorally. Then you have no moral ethics. You need to reassess what's really important to you if many of the decisions you make are hurting others. So in the Bullies to Buddies workbook, he talks about that a lot because, of course, we all, at the end of the day, want to be treated well. So the idea of the golden rule is that that's how you treat others. If that's what you want for yourself, you know, that's what you should be extending to everyone else in your life. So we're going to get into the book, but I have Shelley, who I'm going to bring in, and I believe, Danny, if you would like to come in and talk this morning, press 1. You just turn that button off, and I'm thinking now you don't want to talk. You might be in the middle of something. But if you want to say something, there you are again. Okay. Morning, Shell. How are you?
Well, good morning, Rainey. Good to hear you.
Same here. Same here. I'm glad everything worked this morning. And we have Danny with us, Daniel Sohn. Hi, Dan.
Good morning, Rainey. Good morning, Shelley. How are you all?
Wonderful. Good morning, Danny.
Good morning, Shelley.
We're pretty
Hi,
good,
Rainey.
I guess. Hi, babe. How are you?
Doing very, 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 very well.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. Danny is involved knee-deep, I assume, at some point in time during our journey together. He's going to be neck-deep, but right now he's knee-deep in politics. And I hope that his sense of fair play and his sense of moralities will eventually serve him well in politics, because we surely could use some more of that in politics.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you.
That's for sure.
So today is Bullies to Buddies Day, but Danny, did you call to share something special?
Yes, I called to share about that topic. As a matter of fact, there was an image posted on the internet last night, and I thought it said so many things at the same time. And I'm going to share it with Rainey so everyone can go ahead and see it on her Facebook. But so everyone knows, there was an image of two children, one Palestinian and one Jewish, and one Israeli. One was wearing the yarmulke, and one was wearing the head set. And they had their arms over each other, and they were just looking. We basically saw their backs. Now, we all know for many years that Israel and the Palestine have been fighting, and many people do not believe there is a Palestine. Many people believe that there are, and I thought this image spoke wonders to so many things that young people growing up in modern day times don't really see that, and that they don't see why they're fighting. They just realize we've been fighting for so long that we're going to continue fighting, but, you know, they've really forgotten why, or they don't know why. But this image really spoke wonders to that,
the
that
issue.
Things are changing, number one. And also, I think it was just a beautiful image in itself, that two different cultures, very, very different cultures, could, you know, come together in that image. So I'm going to share that on Rainey's page, and it was posted alongside a story about a man who from the Middle East who was a reporter who went into a Palestinian camp, posed as a Palestinian, and then after becoming very, very good friends with the Palestinian, basically said who he really was, and it didn't really matter to them. I'm going to go ahead and share that on your page, Rainey, but that's what I called about this morning. You said bullies to buddies, and what a beautiful image that was, that portrayed.
Sounds like
you know,
it.
Yeah, I think so, too. Do you remember many years ago, Benetton, a big haberdashery, if you will, a clothing store, Benetton, and they put all their ads were made with babies, children, teenagers, all of different nationalities, ethnic backgrounds, all playing together and in all their pictures. I was so enamored by those pictures. I thought to myself, that's the way it's supposed to be. How awesome and beautiful is that? We are supposed to be all different colors, all different shapes, all different sizes, all different everything. And we're all supposed to be able to believe with our own minds. Otherwise, there'd only be one mind running us.
Right.
You know, there'd be like Pinky and the Brain. Remember that cartoon, Pinky and the Brain?
Yeah.
Where the brain
that
thinks that he's supposed
show.
To run.
That
everybody's
show.
Supposed to be run by the one brain. That's the way it would be if that's the way it was supposed to be. It's not. We are supposed to have different likes and dislikes and different thoughts and different beliefs and everything. But the thoughts, the beliefs, the tastes and everything that we have shouldn't infringe on somebody else's right to have the same.
That's
ever.
Right.
So when I started looking up morality yesterday, and I thought to myself, for me, morality is knowing the difference between good and bad. And ironically, almost every site I went to, that was the first sentence. And it is important that we realize and we really think to ourselves, what is wrong? Just because it doesn't hurt you but it hurts somebody else doesn't make it right. If it hurts anybody, it's wrong. So, are you posting that now, Dan, or are you going to do that later?
I'm going to do that in about an hour and a half. It'll be on your Facebook page.
Okay, wonderful. Well, I'll share it with everybody as well. So, Shel, do you want to say anything this morning about bullying before we start reading the workbook, or do either of you have any stories you want to share that you've seen in the last few weeks about bullying or anything before we get into the workbook?
Well, one of the things that I'd like to comment on is that with all the horrific stories that we've been covering, and it seems like there's more and more depravity, although based on what you said a few minutes ago about the fact that, you know, in the early part of the 1900s, children's asylums were commonplace. I mean, they were all over the United States. They were all over the world. And people knew what was going on and basically, you know, turned a blind eye to it and allowed it to something like that. If it was known, you know, things like that happen behind closed doors still today, not with the city's or the community's approval. And that was interesting that you used that word, and that's exactly what it was, or acceptance. I'm sorry, used the word acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
So even though a lot of these atrocities still happen, there's no longer an acceptance for it. People at least now recognize that it's we can't treat each other like that, and when you have enough people band together, we can rid a lot of these evils. But in contrast to that is what Daniel just brought to us. I'm also seeing more and more postings of things of that nature, where you see random acts of, I mean, just beautiful random acts of kindness from, you know, people interracially, interreligiously, you know, where the person conducting this act of kindness, whether it's to another human or to a child or to an animal, and they, you know, it crosses all race lines, it crosses all religious lines, and gender, and it's, so we really have both extremes right now, which I think makes this a very interesting time to be on Earth, because it shows me that we're, as a people, as a civilization, we're going through a transition. There is still some of the muck left there, but there's a lot of goodness rising out of the muck.
Right. There's still we still are surrounded by bigotry and judgmentality and all those kind of things, but it is that's why I thought it was, even though I found this story to be so gross, I can't think of a better word, gross and atrocious, but I thought to myself, all the things that we talk about that are going on today, this surpasses all of them. It
yep.
surpassed all of them. And
yep.
then on the sites that I've been to, it shows all these beautiful babies just wandering around, wondering why they're here if nobody really wanted them to be here. I can feel that in the pictures. So
yep.
at the end of the day, we have evolved a little bit, I think. And even though there's many atrocities that happen every day, because we know that because we talk about them here, and they talk about them on the front page of every paper and in every news show that there is. But there's still there's still some heroism. There's still some people that are like givers and don't care whether they get repaid. There's still people out there that really want to make a difference and want to make the world that they live in, which is their home, so to speak, a safer, more comfortable, more beautiful place. And I know there's people like that because a lot of them are in my circles. And that's what they want. They want to make a difference. They want things to be nicer, not just for themselves. It's not just about them. It's not based on a self-centered motivation. It's based on feeling the difference in the air and the atmosphere and the whole world around you if it's better and nicer. You know, we've talked about this before, being invited over to a friend's house. And you walk in and the husband and wife or the two best friends that live together or something just had a big blowout. And you walk in and you feel the tension in the air. It like envelops you when you walk into a room.
Yep.
It's the same
with
our world.
And the funny thing is the people can have their backs to you. It's not even like you're reading their facial expressions. But negative emotions permeate at the space around them. So you can, like you said, you can walk into a room where somebody's had an argument or there's been something, or some sad news has been delivered. And even walking up behind these people, you just get a sense that there's something not right.
That's right. That's right. And you want to turn around and go. You don't even want to stay there. You want to be out of that. And, shake it off of the kind of day you're going to have. So when you look at the world as a whole, and if you are one of those kind of people who are perceptive to what's going on in the world and you pay attention, you're not just, you don't have a shell around you. And I know people that have this. I know people that are encased in a little safe zone where they don't see any of this other stuff. They just don't see it. They don't see the homeless man on the corner. I have been composing since last week our talk with Jordan. I have been composing an article that I want to write called Just Buy Him a Better Crack Pipe.
Wow.
Because that blew me away. I was like, oh, my God. You know, but if you can't do anything else, if you do something, and I guess that's what that says. That's how loud that spoke to me, because sometimes you can't. There isn't anything else you can do, but you can do something. So when he said that to me, I sat here that just all day in my head, oh, my God, buy him a better crack pipe. I would never, ever, ever have gone there. But when he said it,
line where you don't want teenagers and young people to have sex with each other. But when you sit back and you realize that there's a high likelihood it's going to continue happening, then at least provide condoms for them. It's the same mentality.
Yeah.
You know, the ideal is for them to abstain until they're emotionally able to handle sex properly and that they're in a relation with somebody that they really, really care about. But because that's not how it happens a lot of time, at least keep them safe and healthy.
Yes.
Or
well,
safer and healthier, let's put it that way.
Right, right. Well, and I believe in that too. There was a time, I've talked about this a lot on the show. Matter of fact, I had this conversation with somebody that I'm working with right now, and we talked about God and religion, and he's very faith-based, and I think I have a lot of faith. I don't think I'd have made it through my life without faith,
right.
But it's always different, you know, and everybody's interpretation of what that is, everybody's interpretation of God is always different, which is good. I think that's fine, but he and I talked, and that's what I said to him. I said, it's supposed to be about what keeps you strong. That's what it's supposed to be. So however you make that work is perfect. Perfect. And,
right.
And it's nobody else's business how it works for you, as long as you live with morals, live by the golden rule, then you're no longer a part of the problem. You just aren't. So, and it seems kind of simple when you look at it like that. It doesn't seem to be simple to bring it to fruition, but it is really that simple. So,
I agree.
Yeah, I think the other thing is that we are headed in the right direction, Shelley. So many people that I talk to today that get it and want things to be, you know, the way it needs to be, I think it's only a matter of time. I'm sorry that there are so many people who are their own worst enemy out there. I'm sorry that there are people who don't think with regard to the feelings of others or the ramifications to others when they make decisions. There's a lot of them out there, and usually the person that they hurt, usually once they roll back from that initial pain, they usually are okay. It's the person that's manifesting all those problems that suffers the greatest. And my heart goes out to them, because some days I wish I could shake some of them and say, do you see what you're doing? Do you understand where you're at? Because the gratification in the moment, or the choice between what they think is right for them and what is wrong for them, is often so off cue, you know, just so off because of the input of someone else. So it gets messy out there, that's for sure. So we've been talking about the morals in the workbook, and we're at a part in the chapter after we talked about the 10 things that make it right and wrong to do some of the things that we're already doing. And we left off last week at how the school staff would treat students if we wanted to live by the golden rule. The staff needs to be functioning in accordance with the golden rule. The golden rule instructs us to be nice to people even when they're mean to us, for we are to treat them the way we want to be treated, not the way they're treating us. When we respond nicely to people who are mean to us, they almost always stop being mean. You know, killing people with kindness has always been something I believed in. Dealing with the public, as a for instance. You often don't think about the person that stands next to you day and night, day and night, day and night, because you think that they're supposed to just love you unconditionally and never be mean to you, but we know that that's not true. But when you meet a stranger and you're in the hospitality industry, you have to, otherwise you're in the wrong business, so get the hell out. If you can't do that, you're not in the right place. You know, but if you do that, they end up being your friend. Maybe not your, you know, somebody you see socially all the time. But once you tolerate their poor behavior and turn it around and give them back something nice, it's very rare that they stay that cranky. Very, very rare. Not that it doesn't happen on occasion, but it is rare. The golden rule requires us to respect students even when they disrespect us. If we are disrespectful, we're teaching them to be disrespectful. It is irrelevant if the students were the first to be disrespectful. We refuse to disrespect children by using the insulting term bully. We do not conduct anti-jerk, anti-slut, anti-wimp, or anti-idiot campaigns. And we will not conduct anti-bully campaigns either. Anti-bully campaigns promote hostility and intolerance. No one is perfect. Amen. We are all occasionally bullies, jerks, sluts, wimps, or idiots. And we would not want society conducting campaigns of intolerance against us. Good, good point. The moral code... I know, isn't that awesome? And if you guys met Izzy, it's even more I don't know. I guess amusing is a good word to hear him saying these things after you've met him, because he's just unbelievably kind and gentle and kind of like roll with the flow. You know what I mean? He's like, I don't know. This doesn't sound nice, but I mean it with a lot of love and heart. You remember the blow-up clowns that you punched and they just kept standing back up with a big smile on their face?
Yes, yes.
Okay. That's Izzy for me. He's like,
wow.
You know, it really didn't hurt that much. So here I am again. That's just his whole demeanor. The moral code of rules and punishments. Our school will strive to establish a disciplinary code of rules and punishments that is truly moral. Otherwise, we will be causing more harm than good in raising children who are immoral. This code will be an evolving document that we are hopeful will improve over time as we grow in wisdom and experience. The golden rule will be our guide in establishing rules and punishments. We cannot treat all negative behaviors as punishable offenses, or the school staff will be constantly involved in prosecuting and punishing children while simultaneously escalating hostilities and preventing them from learning how to deal with such behaviors on your own. That's the most important part. That is the most important part.
Right.
You don't, you know, it's like, gosh, keeping it really, really simple. You make yourself some scrambled eggs, and you put salt on them, and you take a bite, and you think, oh, I put too much salt on these. Do you put more salt on them?
Of course
not. I mean,
that's how
simple it is, though. It's everything he's saying. Somebody's mean to you, so being mean back is going to stop the altercation? I don't think so. Or change anything? No. Furthermore, a legalistic process hinders the development of children's moral development. When we prosecute children for hurting others, we would like them to feel remorse. Instead, they are likely to attempt to avoid punishment by justifying their negative behavior and blaming the other side. Ah, how often does that happen? As adults, we often do things that others experience as negative, and we wouldn't want to stand trial every time we do so. That's the truth, too. We will use a formula derived from the Golden Rule for determining what behaviors will be punishable offenses and which will not. The formula is, would I be willing to be punished for doing that behavior to you if you are willing to be punished for doing it to me? If the majority of rational people would answer yes, then that behavior would be deemed a punishable offense. If they would answer no, it will not. Did you understand all that, Shel?
Yeah.
Okay.
The only thing I understand the concept behind that, but there are people I know that are very, I guess the word is amoral, I'm not sure. I mean, they recognize that things aren't done prop, you know, that they do things that aren't right. They're completely intolerant with having the same behavior done to them that they do to other people. They actually get enraged where they want to go after somebody if they do something like that to them. But then they can't seem to see it in themselves. It's like, so they would say, no, I'm not willing to be punished for something like that, even if you're willing to be punished, because in their eyes, they're always justified in anything they do.
Yeah,
so
that's a good point.
You know,
that's a very good point.
It does say rational people, though, and I think people like that are not rational. I think what they do is, in their own heads, they create a double standard where they're going to only permit certain things being done to them, but they're going to widen the scope of what they can do to other people based on being able to get what they want out of life, you know.
Right.
So maybe the key
that,
there is that, he's saying rational people would make the decision.
Right. Well, it's personal justification, just like you just said. We have another caller. Good morning. This is Renee. Welcome to Renee's Heart to Heart.
Hi, Renee. This is Chiquita. How are you?
Oh, hi, dear. How are you? I thought it might be you.
Good.
I looked at the area code, and I thought this might be you, and I knew you were up this morning. So welcome back to the show. How are you?
Nice to hear from you again, Chiquita.
Hi, how are you? Yeah, I thought I'd call in and say hello. It's been a while. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah, it's well, I've been keeping track of you, though, on Facebook. She's she's a mover and a shaker, Shell. She's a mover and a shaker.
You're the young one with the magazine, correct?
Yeah, that's me.
Yes, yeah, okay,
yep.
I thought, yeah.
Yep, that's
me. And how
me.
Are things going in your relationship with your mom?
Oh, it's not good. We actually had another fight today.
Geez.
So she put her hands on me. But I guess in the good thing that I'm taking from this, I'm a very spiritual person. I actually tried to move out of state in March, and I had everything lined up, had a job, you know, well, contracts for my business and everything lined up, but I wasn't permitted to leave. The universe, you know, I believe in God, but I'll just say the universe, you know, didn't allow things to line up. Stuff started falling through, you know, just that type of situation. And I just really feel like, you know, there must be a time where we all have to confront our bullies. There has to be a time, and how we do that is the key. You know what I'm saying? Because it seems easy to just be like, you know what, I'm going to bounce, I'm going to leave and just focus on me. I'm happy in all of my other areas of my life except but this one, so why am I putting so much energy? But I notice I've been in this cycle since I was 14, leaving the house, coming back to help out, you know, that type of thing. And I haven't actually confronted it, though, until recently. And you notice that when you do confront your fears or whatever it is, sometimes they try to consume you. Your fears or whoever that person is harboring fear and the intimidation tries to consume you even more. You know, how dare you try to challenge me, or how dare you try to leave me? No one else will love you. You know, all that extra stuff. But it's a certain strength that I'm channeling right now that I know is going to fuel me as a CEO. You see what I'm saying?
Right, right.
Yeah. And something really powerful. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No. Finish your thought, sweetie.
Well, I was going to say today I was watching television, and a very famous manager, she's in the hip-hop entertainment world, but she's a famous manager. Her son committed suicide last year because of internet bullying.
Oh,
and,
wow.
Yeah, and all of the posting and, you know, the accusations against her son and her. Her son is, his name is Waka Flocka. He's a rapper, but everybody in the hip-hop world knows him. But anyway, he his brother committed suicide because he could not sustain the, you know, abuse that was going on, people talking about his mom and his brother in these ways, you know, and he just got so, I guess, consumed by it and felt so backed into a corner that he shot himself in the head.
Oh,
and
wow.
She started a movement that I want to be a part of. It's called a No RIP, No Reckless Internet Posting.
Oh,
and as
wow.
A media,
I like that.
Yeah, I love it. As a media outlet, you know, blogs and all these other types of stuff, they promote all of that craziness. So as a media outlet, I felt like it was my obligation to hop on that movement, and lo and behold, you know, an incident happens today. So, yes. But, yeah, I'm done with my thought.
Yeah.
Well, I love that, reckless internet posting. That is really, really – that's really great, perfect, right mm-hmm. on kind of
mm-hmm.
a thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, we've talked about, yeah, we've talked about the postings a lot, and we've talked about cyberbullying a lot. And what I see happens is people are very brassy when they're faceless.
Even when I
do articles here that are, you know, that are on the internet or big stories, Huffington Post and places like that carry a lot of the off the wall stories that are going on. And then as I scroll down and I look at the comments, I am blown away by the things people say. It's like, you know, there was a shooting someplace, and it was posted on Facebook. So I clicked on it because it's not because I wanted to do it on the show, but I clicked on it because it's up where I'm from. And somebody said, well, it must have been a black guy. And then somebody else said, well, he was probably a fag. And then I'm like, what in the world does any – they found an opportunity to hurt each other because they were faceless. So they could say any mean thing, any horrible thing, any thing that had no credence whatsoever, any way they wanted to. So I love this. I love, love, love this.
Yes.
If you wanna really get involved in this, and then we'll dedicate an hour. You call and fill us in and tell us what's happening with that. I would love that because I think that I'm a big letter writer. Shelley will tell you I counsel people to write letters to their loved ones when they're struggling. I think I even did that with you. I said,
yeah,
you know, write a letter because a lot of times you can get the things that you won't be able to get out in person because you'll become overwhelmed by the emotions. So writing it down on a piece of paper, and I've shared the fact that it saved my marriage so many times because sometimes I'd write it, read it, and think, oh, Rini, you're being an idiot. You know, this is all about you. This isn't about anything he did. He doesn't deserve this letter. Then other times I'd give it to him, and we've been married 47 years. He'd hold it in his pocket and keep reading it until he understood where I was coming from. But this opportunity on a social network to just say mean things to somebody has got to stop. I agree. I so agree. And I think this is imperative to the well-being of the young people that are coming up today, because if they start thinking that's okay, imagine how bad things will be able to get.
Yeah, and I think that that's a very good point, because the young people today, I went out with my niece and her husband the other night, and he was talking at dinner about, now they're young, they're in their mid-20s, and he made a comment that he had a bad day at work. He went on Facebook and he posted some nonsense on there. Now, he didn't say anything that would injure anybody, but he said after he calmed down and posted it and read what he wrote, he was actually embarrassed by what he wrote. And he said, you know, he said from now on, I mean, he made this assessment himself. He says, from now on, he says, I'm going to have to wait an hour before I vent on Facebook, because he says, now it's out there. And he says, I wish I hadn't said what I said. He says, it makes me look like an idiot. So thank God he didn't say anything about somebody else. You know, he made some comments about himself, but now he wished he hadn't, because he feels it put him in a bad light, what he was complaining about, you know. But how many people do that, but they're saying something negative about another person, and then maybe an hour after they post it, they wish they hadn't, you know. In this particular case, it was that he embarrassed himself. But, you know, but you attack other people, and the bottom line is once it's out there, you can't take it back. So, you know, I would say 90% of what's posted in anger should never make it on Facebook, if it's not 100%.
I agree 100%. But I also believe in free speech. But I believe in free speech with some
tact.
Yeah, that's a good word. And some observance of other people's feelings.
Right.
You
know,
I don't think free speech
includes getting on there and saying something like, oh, it must have been a black man, or it must have been a fag. That's not free speech to me. That's just
harassment. You're right.
That's
harassment.
And
exactly.
And it's demeaning. It to me is just a bunch of cowards that sit behind a computer all day, you know, that find things to ramble on and on about. You know, I even had some random African-American guy. I'm African-American, by the way. So he contacts me over Facebook, and he just starts calling me all types of N-words and, you know.
Oh, wow.
He had a very white supremacist, quote-unquote, mentality, and he was, you know, advertising himself as a black guy. Now, this is, I'm not saying that it was a white guy, you know, behind it, but it's just so crazy that if he really was African-American and calling me all of these names as if he is, you know, supremacist, lets me know how agitated he is with himself.
Exactly.
And this is the only way that he can get out of his frustrations about his own, you know, I guess, insecurities, abnormalities, excuse me, couldn't get it out. But, yeah, you know, a lot of people do that because they have no outlet, so they go to the Internet and find things to just bash.
Yep. And all hatred is based out of fear anyway. When you're comfortable with who you are, when you allow yourself to feel a sense of safety, then you actually embrace the differences in other people. You find, well, then that's how I've always lived my life. I love the diversity of religions, the diversity of cultures, the diversity of health. You know, I mean, I embrace that. I love it. You know. But I've noticed that people that are bigoted or prejudiced in any way, whether it's against other religious groups or the way people look or whatever, or their ethnicities, although they talk hatred and they talk violence, there's this underlying fear in them. They're afraid of things that are different than them. And on some level, and I don't mean to be insulting these people, but they're very ignorant, and that's based on fear and ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yes, and their own insecurities, major insecurities, because you always want to make somebody else look fatter than you, dumber than you, uglier than you, everything that you find bad about yourself, you want them to be worse than you. It's like a human fault, you know. Why we
want to
do that, I don't know, but we do.
Well, I guess let me add my insight into why that happens. I feel like people try to point out other people's flaws to make them not feel so bad about their own.
Right.
So
exactly.
It's like, exactly. And that's really what it is. It's a justification for them not to do their work.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Oh, that person is worse than me. So look at her. Don't look at me. Look at him. Don't look at me. You know, well, you're talking about me, but what about this person and that person? You know, it's to avoid growing up. Because doing spiritual work is
avoid putting
up
to live a particular way. I see that happen a lot with successful people. I've talked to people. I'm very observant of people that succeed in certain things, whether it be in sports or whatever. I like following them because to me it's inspiring. You know, if somebody has done something that I can't do, they have my attention because, okay, so how did they do that thing, you know? How did they do that, you know, mentally, physically, financially, or whatever? But I sometimes when I talk to other people, instead of saying, wow, that's impressive, they say, oh, well, I don't think they're really happy. Oh, well, that's because, you know, somebody handed the money. They didn't really do it. So what they do is they rationalize how this person got it and doesn't really deserve it, and in 5 years they're probably not going to be happy anymore. And I'm like, oh, my God, where's all that negativity coming from? Why would you be ripping this person apart that you should be really impressed by and maybe kind of analyzing how they did that because maybe you could make your life better too? But because they don't want to get off point A, they don't want to make any changes, they rationalize that this person that did this great over thing over here, it's not really as great as it looks, and it's all going to fall apart. And that's such a, like you said, it's all born out of insecurity and people, mm-hmm. it, almost kind of an emotional laziness, because yeah. they're not willing to put out to do the things this person did to succeed, so they have to trash it for some reason.
Right. And I mean, as a successful person, I try to surround myself with other successful people. I notice when that's done, it's like, oh, you're lucky, Chiquita, but you don't see the nights that I'm up through the night. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
and it is more about, I just think, you know, that whole crab in the pot mentality. People limit themselves, so in turn, I feel like their perception of their ability to attain is also limited. So when you look at somebody who is successful and you say, they got something that I want, and instead of saying, oh, they got something that I want, I can get that too. You see what I'm saying? It's like, if you have it, then I can't get
exactly.
it, so I'm upset about that. You see what
right.
I'm saying? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So if people change their perceptions, you know, not even change their perceptions, but don't place limitations on yourself, because in turn, you're placing limitations on your perception to things. And to your ability to attain them.
Right. Well, it's almost like they get into the mindset that success is limited and there's only so
mm-hmm.
much to go around. And
right.
that's not
right.
true, you know, not true
no.
at all. I think
mm-hmm.
that,
that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, I
mm-hmm.
it is sad, you know, and we've talked about this, especially in the workplace. And very often, one show we dedicated to just sibling rivalry, where a lot of all that stuff starts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have, I just, last night, Spike and I were relaxing and we watched a Criminal Minds where this family falls apart because of this and that and the other thing, and they blame the husband because he's got stuff going on. And it ends up being the teenage daughter killed her mother, her sister, and was framing her father. Why? Because when the little sister was born, she got all the attention. And you read about stories like that all the time. It's so important for we as parents and we as friends. I know that it seems like a lot of work for somebody who should be doing it for themselves. But if we do it for others, it gets done for us, let's face it. And that is to be aware of the fact that somebody that you care about is feeling down about themselves or going through something because of jealousy or inability to see past the fact that the person standing next to you is working a hell of a lot harder than you are. That's why they're succeeding. But you can't
mm-hmm.
see it. When you're in
mm-hmm.
that place, you can't see it. So a good
mm-hmm.
friend, a good parent, a good sister, a good brother, hopefully that's what we can achieve someday, because we all get there once in a while. We all get
mm-hmm.
to that place where we're like, you know, I'm going to go out and eat worms kind of a place, you know,
mm-hmm.
because nothing happens for me and everything I try to do gets screwed up and what did I do wrong, I quit saying this, what can happen next, because inevitably something will, because that's where I'm at.
Right, right.
That's where
I'm inviting it in. Right. But think about it. It actually permeates everything in life when you talk
mm-hmm.
about when you're happy for other people's
mm-hmm.
successes, you can
yep.
actually draw that into your own life, because it's like you're opening up your attention to it. And when you look at what other people did that brought them good things, then you have the ability to be, oh. But if you're constantly angry over other people's successes, and somehow rationalizing in your head that they got it by bad methods or that it's all going to fall apart, then what it does is it makes you feel okay to be where you are and that you're not advancing in life in any way, but it also prevents you from ever advancing in life. I'll give a perfect example. Last year, I won a small lottery winning, about $12,000, and it was at a time that my sister wanted to go to Germany to see her son. And I just didn't have the money for the trip. And then all of a sudden, I win $12,000. And we also go to Texas and to a couple other things. So we really had a wonderful trip, and it was brought up by this lottery winning. Well, a couple of people I told about it got tears in their eyes, and they were so happy for me. But two of the people that heard about it got mad. They were like,
really?
You know, like, well, what? I've been playing the lottery for years. I've never won anything. Instead of being happy that I won it, they actually got angry. Like, why did I deserve a lottery winning? How did, you know, it's like, my God, where did that come from? You know, and it was actually shocking to me because I've never, if I hear that somebody wins the lottery, I've actually known two other people that won at the lottery, and I was thrilled for them. I was so excited, even though it didn't happen to me. So there is something in some people, and if people would realize that that holds them back in life, if you begrudge somebody for success, if you begrudge somebody for having good luck, you're actually preventing it from ever happening in your own life.
That's the truth. You bring in that negativity into your life and everything gets negative. Everything gets darker and darker on a daily basis. How are things going with your magazine, speaking of successful?
Oh, my gosh. Everything is going really, really, really well. And
I'm so glad to hear that.
Yeah, I mean, I even had to start a third business. Okay, well, the magazine and the boutique is basically one brand. So that is doing really well, and we've actually are about to open up a pop-up storefront across the nation. So we're just going to do, like, a month in one city, and then we'll move to another city and do a month there. It's
wow.
going to be fun. It's going to be like a tour.
That project.
Huh?
What state here?
Well, I'm starting in California, and then I'm working my way to the East Coast.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, we just partnered up with Microsoft, so they're giving us full access to all of their stores for any events that I need. Yeah, I mean, honestly, I have not many complaints, you know, stuff. I'm not really paying myself fully right now because I was somewhat in the negative from last quarter trying to help my mother out. So I've been, you know, just supplementing, putting that back into the business. But, I mean, I've got so many celebrities. I just did an event where I went to, I was invited to the president of the Multicultural Film Association, I think it's called.
Wow.
Which they partner up with all the Grammys. And, you know, it was huge. I'm really, really, really blessed. So, and this is honestly, you know, in regards to my mom and I think that's a precursor as to why we conflict so much. You know what I mean? I feel like a lot of mothers consume themselves and their kids, which is natural because I'm a mother myself. But when it becomes so much to where, you know, you feel entitled or you feel
right.
like you need to be paid back, then that's when, you know, the lines are blurred with the whole mother-daughter aspect of things. The sibling rivalry kicks in because their inner child is throwing tantrums because they're not where they want to be in accordance to their kid. And it's
right,
typical.
Right.
It's like the nice thing to say, oh, I'm happy for my child. But in the inside, a lot of mothers aren't. You know, I'm the oldest in my family, so you know that whole oldest daughter versus the mom thing comes into play too.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I'm pretty well aware of that one myself.
Yeah, I know you were explaining last time.
Yeah. Do you think, do you actually think, I don't know, do you think your mom is jealous or do you think your mom is, because there's a lot of emotions that could be tied to this. It doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't have to necessarily be negative. Do you think there's any chance that there's some fear of the unknown that's coming from your mom, and she doesn't know how to keep you safe any other way than to pull you down and keep you back with her? Have you given that any consideration?
Yes, I have. I've
okay.
considered even the fact that she's mentally stuck at a younger age than I.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the way that she processes things, I noticed just in dealing with a lot of, you know, older people but are still in kind of like my age proximity. My mom is only 16 years older than me, so that's not really a big age difference when it comes to a mother-daughter.
Right.
So, you know, when I look at older people and I try to make sense of their actions, it's just like the way that they process and deal with things is how I was dealing with things when I was like maybe 16, 17, 18 years old. And I mean, for one, I had to grow up really early. I helped my mom a lot. I was kind of like her right-hand man. You know, she was a single parent. So, you know, I'm the oldest. I have to step up to the plate. And I think a lot of that has created a safety blanket for her. So when I started about 17, 18, I interned at my first law firm at 18. At 17, I graduated valedictorian. I was going to college and high school at 16. So when I started to really consume myself in building me up, that's when stuff really started hitting the fan for our relationship. So I mean, I think it's all of the above. I think there's a little bit of jealousy. I think there is, you know, some insecurities there, some resentment, some bitterness, definitely some fear.
Some abandonment issues. Well, you it sounds like you have your hands full with her. I hope that at the end of all of it, you can still care about her. That's the part that I worry about. That's the part I worried about the first day I ever spoke to you, because I hear in your voice a lot of care and a lot of love, but I also hear some annoyance and some, you know, like, okay, let me fly, for God's sakes, let me fly. And she's hanging on to you with a bungee cord. And I hope that you're able to maintain a certain amount of love and respect for her regardless of her behavior, because number one, it's healthier for you. And I don't hear ever in anything you say in your voice that tells me that you would just abandon her. So it will always have to be, whatever decisions you make will almost always have to be okay with her, I think, because it's just who you are. So I think you should embrace that a little bit and feel proud of yourself for that, because I, even though I hear all the other things, the words that you're saying and everything, I also hear and feel a major connection with your mom. And, you know, she's the only one you'll ever have, honey.
Yeah, but I'm the only daughter she will ever have. And that's what reciprocity.
She knows that.
Thing I know we're almost out of time, but I have a good friend of mine who had a very acrimonious relationship with her mother most of their lives, and her mother even as an adult woman, one time she slapped her across the face because she said something that ticked her mother off, and it was something that she wasn't being disrespectful, but this was who her mother was. And finally, about a year and a half ago, she told her mother, she said, look, she said, we've had this relationship my entire life. I love you. I will always love you. But I'm telling you right now, if you do not start respecting me as an adult, I have a husband, I have two children. She said, if you do not start respecting me, she said, you will never see me again. She says, figure out a way to snap yourself out of this and treat me as an adult. But she says, I demand that you treat me better. And her mother did, almost on a dime, altered her behavior because she was not willing to not have her in her life anymore. But my friend got to the point where it was like, I'm not going to tolerate this anymore. I'm a grown woman.
Honestly, that's always been my position. I know we have a little bit of time left, but I just wanted to say real quickly, is that I've always been the one to take the higher road. You know, I know she relies on me financially. I know she's always been, you know, looking to me sort of to be like a spouse in a lot of ways. I know it sounds creepy, but I pick up my siblings. I contribute financially. I take them shopping and, you know, all this other stuff that she can't do when she's doing whatever. So I've came to that point already. It's like, well, why do, if we're so close and we help each other so much, why do we have to, you know, do this? And I'm not going to tolerate it. But see, she's so much of a control freak that when she loses control, she literally loses control. She goes haywire.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So she probably needs a little bit more. She probably needs a little bit more help than what you're able to give her.
Exactly, and that's where I'm at, because I can't help her anymore. I've tried, but now it's impacting me, and I have a son. So it's now to that point where she has to live life without me, because that's a fear of hers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hear that too. Well, we are out of time. I'm so glad you called. It was so nice to hear from you again, and please keep me posted about
Rest in Peace.
I want to do a show about that because I think that's just really, really right up there in the top. So everybody, have a great day today. Go out there and make it a nice one here in Florida. It's sunny. It's been very hot. So everybody drink lots of water today and stay cool as many times as you can. And we'll be back tomorrow morning. God bless. Thank you, ladies, so much. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Renee. Bye-bye, everyone.